RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
It's time for our political panel, being a Friday morning here at RCR. And on our panel this morning is Ro Edge. Hi, Ro.
Hi, how are you, Paul?
I'm good, thank you. Marty Gibson.
Morning, Paul. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you, Marty. And also, hopefully very shortly, Jill Ovens will join us, but we've got to hit the go button right now because time is tight and we're right at the end of the week. So let's start. Let's get straight into it. Giggle versus tickle. Or is it tickle versus giggle?
Tickle versus giggle.
Okay. I've seen some of your posts, Ro, on this on X. Obviously, we're very well aware of the story with Sal Grover. She's been on quite a few times in the lead up to the decision that we heard from the Federal Court of Australia. And with one of your posts, Ro, I saw a picture of Mr. Tickle.
He's an attractive beast, isn't he?
Oh, gosh. Why are they? I'm sorry, but there's never any aesthetic involved in this.
Well, that's the reason why none of the world's major LGBT organisations have yet talked about it. Because, you know, Jason Tickle, like, he doesn't have the right look for, like, the agenda they're trying to push, and so they're all avoided it. You know, no one wants to celebrate a straight, entitled, ugly man because it would really tarnish their brand, wouldn't it? There was, yeah. I think it was Equity Australia were the only ones to post, and they put something on Instagram and LinkedIn, and they used a stock photo of a woman, like a pretty young woman. I know. It's like, hello, that is not Tickle. That's how toxic the whole thing is. They do not want that promoted because it is not good for their brands and for the agenda they're pushing.
I can't believe that anyone bought his story. Boo-hoo, right? Boo-hoo.
This is the problem when you change legislation, and we're going through this at the moment with the Law Commission, which I know we're talking about later. But basically, when you protect gender identity and you surpass it in terms of sex, then pretty much women have no boundaries, right? We have no boundaries away from men in Australia now. And if this happens in New Zealand, it will be the same. And basically, every single man who wants to bypass women's boundaries pretty much is a predator, right? Because good men never do that. So the Australian law now allows predators to have open access to women's safe spaces and places, and they cannot do a thing about it. If they do, they'll end up in court being charged with discrimination, just as Sal Grover has.
Marty.
Oh, it's just that Voltaire observation, isn't it? Anyone who has the power to make you believe absurdities has the power to make you commit injustices.
I like it. Yep.
I mean, it, and I know it's tough for feminists because they're always being told they're being hoisted on their own petard with this, where, you know, they were fighting to have more masculine gender stereotypes, or to at least break down the stereotype that they could only be feminine, and now they've got, you know, personality disordered men going by some of the rules that emerged from that and intruding on their space where normally, I think often men are happy to provide women with a space where they can be safe.
Of course, it's natural. You want to do that.
Yeah, and normally through men, there's a weeding out of those men who would pose a threat to women in that way. There was I always think about the study that was done by some sociologist. He was studying personality disorders, and so he was studying it in various cultures. And he was talking to an Inuit, and he said, you know, he was reading out a list of the symptoms, and they said, yes, we have those people. And he said, well, what sort of thing do they typically do? And he said, well, you know, they'll pretend they're sick when we go fishing and try to sleep with our wives. And the guy got all excited and said, well, how does the tribe deal with this sort of thing? And they said, oh, we take them hunting and throw them in a crevasse.
Okay.
So there's a consequence of
one way to weed them out.
Well, I'm not suggesting that that's what we should do, but I'm suggesting that there are going to be consequences of pretending that everyone is normal, and that people are doing these.
Well, that's
sort of
it. It's pretending. And yeah. if it's the law, why not make a law that says the sky's not blue? So you can stand there saying the sky's blue, and lose in court. You know.
Well, that's what's important about it. It comes down to that forcing people to believe a lie or pretend that they believe a lie, at least.
Yeah, that's an attack on our freedom of beliefs, our freedom of speech, our freedom of association, everything, isn't it? Because, you know, when you're forced to believe something you know that isn't true, it's quite authoritarian.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it is.
Here's another thing, Ro, I particularly like to get your view on this. This whole thing is all about men, I've decided, because here with Tickle, it's obvious he's a man and he's enjoying the misogyny. I get that feeling. He's getting something out of it. But then going the other way, you've got women wanting to be men. It all comes back to men, yet men are kind of toxic and kind of the enemy. I don't get any of this. But
the woman wanting to be men aren't infringing on men's rights the way.
No, I know that. I know that. I'm talking more about the psychology of it. It sort of bypasses women every way you look at it.
Yeah. No, it does. I mean, because we're trying to erase women in law, in society, in total, aren't we, by saying that anyone can be one. And we're also like, you know, being a young woman these days is incredibly challenging. You know, you've got with the advent of social media, there's just no escape from all the pressures that come on them when they're going through puberty, and they spend way too much time on it. And to be able to, like, I think if I could have opted out of having my periods and all the rest of it when I was a teenager, I probably would have gone, whoa, yahoo, bring it on. Like, you know, it's going through womanhood is really, really challenging at the best of times, but we have given this easy opt-out option now, telling young kids wrongly that there are no consequences for doing so. When it's so not right. I believe this movement, that whole gender ideology movement, is the most homophobic movement we have ever seen, because it's pretty much telling young girls who, you know, love playing sport or, you know, being outdoorsy and doing what used to be seen as boy things, is that they were born in the wrong body and, you know, they should be boys. Lesbians are disappearing and trans men are everywhere, and non-binary, of course.
Well, the point you make about erasing gay people is well made, and anyone who listens to RCR has probably heard someone point out that most of the people who suffer gender dysmorphia at a young age turn out to be gay in the end. So, and a lot of the people who transition are autistic, so they don't feel right within themselves. And so when someone says, well, maybe you're born in the wrong body, it makes perfect sense. But once they have surgery that's irreversible, they realize, well, no, it's not that. But it's a terrible step too far.
Yeah.
Sal's taking it all the way legally in Australia. How do you think she'll do at the end of it, Ro? Have you given any thought to that?
Well, she's got to take it all the way, otherwise women have no rights in the future. There's only one option, and that is to fight, fight, fight. I hope she wins. You know, we've got to stay positive. And, you know, this federal judge who basically said that sex is changeable, I mean, it's an utter joke. But what we need to do, what Australia need to do, is they need to change their Sex Discrimination Act and get rid of gender identity. And if this is what needs to happen in order for that to take place, well, then so be it. Well, let's hope it does anyway.
Do you think this thing burns itself out at some time?
Oh, I don't know. I've been hoping it's going to be burning itself out for 5 years now. It's just getting worse and worse.
It's a symptom of civilizational collapse. You know, that's the point Camille Paglia always makes. It's there's nothing new under the sun. It's a sign of a society that's lost confidence in itself, and it happens repetitively. You know, the Roman Empire, the Greek Empire, that they all move into these little fetishes. And I think personally, it's, I always quote that increase in the prevalence of words like transgender, like racism, like white privilege, all happened around 2011, 2012, just shot up like a rocket once the left started talking about Occupy Wall Street and the right started talking about the Tea Party. The people who print the money would much rather we were having this debate than than talking about some of
misdirection.
The things that really affect us. Yeah, it is classic misdirection. There's only so much outrage to go around.
All right, anything more to say about Tickle versus Giggle?
I hope she's got a give a little page because this is one of, well, I'm going to give her some money because this is one of those battles that's pivotal, and it's heartbreaking that it's cost her over $1 million. And it's a fight that she's putting on for all of us. So I think we should all support her.
So yeah, let me tell you what that page is if anyone wants to. It's gigglecrowdfund.com. So gigglecrowdfund.com. So, yeah, please support her if you can. Like, it's a massive effort that she's having to do. Now, she, I really feel for Sal. Like, she was, I think, 16 or 18 weeks pregnant when all of this started. Her daughter's now 2, and her life has been consumed by it. It's just completely nuts. So, yeah. She's
just
got
the hide you'd have to put someone through that, to force yourself on a team of hockey players, including teenage girls. It's just a unique bit of pathology, isn't it?
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting who ends up being the right person, because I think she's the right person at the right time. It's always been an interesting thing for me, and it's her this time, and I think she's up to it.
The Law Commission at the moment, they're reviewing the Human Rights Act, and they're trying to put gender identity as a protected category in the protected in the Human Rights Act, which will create exactly the same problems as Australia has seen. So, you know, basically women will have no rights. So we're trying to fight that at the moment. I've got an amazing legal person in our Save Women Sport team who has written our submission. I was just going through it the other night. It is amazing. But, you know, in this document, they basically state that it that male advantage isn't known. It's like, seriously?
What?
Yeah, the evidence, I'll tell you what they've written totally. The evidence about male advantage in sports is both emerging and incomplete. I mean, how much evidence and research are they going to need until they understand?
Do you think they purposely, you know, stay ignorant or feign ignorance?
I don't know. A lot of the report, too, is based on the Counting Ourselves survey that was done by Inside Out, I think, years ago.
And it was objective.
A survey that people could fill in multiple times. It was only of the LGBTQ+++ group, and basically they have based a lot of the review on that survey, even though most 30% of people didn't even finish it, you know, so they haven't based it on anything else. They haven't researched women or surveyed any other groups in society about the impacts of their changes. It's like, it really is appalling. I'm just hoping now that we have a new human rights commissioner that some sanity will prevail in that organization, and these changes will be turfed out.
Well, I gave you a Voltaire quote on it. There's another great Theodore Dalrymple quote I could read out if you don't mind, Paul.
Yeah, go.
He says, "Political correctness is communist propaganda writ small. In my study of communist societies, I came to the conclusion that the purpose of communist propaganda was not to persuade or convince, not to inform, but to humiliate. And therefore, the less it corresponded to reality, the better. When people are forced to remain silent when they are being told the most obvious lies, or even worse, when they're forced to repeat the lies themselves, they lose once and for all their sense of probity. To assent to obvious lies is in some small way to become evil oneself. One's standing to resist anything is thus eroded and even destroyed. A society of emasculated liars is easier to control. I think if you examine political correctness, it has the same effect and is intended to."
Wowza. Go Marty. All right. Winston Peters commits heresy against the climate fairy cult. Media lovies assemble with torches and pitchforks to obtain repentance, Marty.
Well, maybe I over-egged the pudding a little bit on that one. But
no, I think you're about right.
It did have that vibe. I don't know if you caught Jenna Lynch on 3 News. Just really did remind me of that lady out of that movie, The Highlander, you know, where she's saying, "No, burn him!" Foreign Minister Winston Peters is denying claims he questioned humanity's role in climate change after comments he made while in Tonga at the Pacific Islands Forum. So he was asked about his about climate change yesterday, given its importance, the forum in the region spoke of how climate had changed for thousands of years, citing floods in the same area in Hawke's Bay that saw extensive flood damage in Cyclone Gabrielle. And what it said was, there's always climate change. Our job is to build as much as we can the resilience against it. And the guy who wrote this article, I think it was Adam Pearce, sanctimoniously said, a common argument for those who denied humans caused the warming climate was to state that climate had changed naturally, independent of humanity. It has.
Oh, my gosh. And there's, like, you know, years and years and years and years of records. Ask any geologist. My son's an engineering geologist. He can tell you all about the changes of the climate over, you know, hundreds of thousands of years.
Even the poles change every 17,000 years, apparently. They switch.
Yeah, well, that's how they discovered seafloor spreading, because the background magnetic direction of the magnetite crystals in the rock is set when it's molten. And so it forms stripes parallel to the mid-ocean ridges. Once you study this, and I did study it at university, and you look at these graphs of climate and you go, well, where's the medieval warm period? It's just been sanded off. So it's the Minoan warm period. My increasing belief about this is that it's an equivalent to the banks raising interest rates to constrict the supply of money. You know, energy is just another form of capital.
Yeah.
And I think climate hysteria is the equivalent of raising interest rates. It justifies making energy more expensive.
But to buy into it, seems to me that there's an element of self-loathing that needs to be present to
Does
buy
it
into it.
Does it remind about us being forced to say men in dresses are women?
It's really similar to the whole gender ideology. It's just another belief system, isn't it? And nothing, not even facts, can depart from that belief system. I mean, God, the inconvenient fact is that as CO2 has increased, so has the greening of the planet and our ability to feed more people. And I'm still yet to see the ocean rises actually have any effect. I mean, I just think it's completely nuts.
Well, I think a lot of the rise of apparent rise of sea levels in some Pacific islands, they studied it, and it's because they were catching fish using dynamite. So that kind of had the effect of changing the currents, and also overfishing meant that they were eating parrotfish that were eating coral and pooping out sand. So the sand was going, they were sand mining. So, the deal is, okay, you act like you're going to lose your island because of us having cheap energy, and we'll give you some money. And they're like, yeah, sure.
Easily solved. But also the credibility of NIWA has been on the line recently. And I think there might have been some reference to NIWA in that Winston story. I saw. I was reading too much into it.
I think I seem to remember he did mention that there was some question about their data, and it doesn't bear close scrutiny by anyone who knows much about the subject. But
data from like the floods in 1941 and 1953 or something.
Yes, they did, because the war was on.
And did I hear Judith Collins say that was a bit of a conspiracy? And did she blame wars like Hitler and the Korean War for the missing data?
Actually, that was quite clever of her, right on the spot. And I don't think she'd thought this through before. She came up, well, there was a war on then. I said, what about 53? And then she said, the Korean War.
The next time you have her on, you'll have to say, don't talk about the war.
Don't mention the war.
But, you know, they also erased all that. Well, they didn't erase it. They just hadn't studied the barometric pressure, which indicated that at some points in the late 19th century, we were having a cyclone bowler every year.
Yeah.
So there's some culpability by the people who fudged that data for some of the decisions that have been made about building on floodplains.
And unfortunately, it cost 11 people their lives.
Well, that's the big deal.
It's unacceptable, really.
But the ban on discussing the possibility that anthropogenic CO2 might not be the primary driver of climate change is disgusting, particularly given the amount of money that it's costing us. And I saw a projection years ago that it was likely to cost New Zealand $70 billion this decade. And so we're having all these arguments about the treaty.
Well, we can't even afford that. We don't have that sort of money.
No.
And I don't want to turn our farmland into toxic waste dumps of solar panels, you know, in 20 years, because that's what we're going to have.
Pine trees.
Yeah, and you know, I can't believe all these environmentalists are putting big wind farms out in the ocean and killing whales. They used to care about the whales. it's so nonsensical.
They don't. This is the thing. They actually don't.
No, they don't. They just care about money. It's all about money.
I think they care about being seen to be good people with minimal actual work. Yeah. And so they're told, hey, you know, people are good, have this view on climate change. You want to be a good person? And so, you know, out they go protesting, really having little understanding of the science or the history of it. And there's still so many headlines that are based on what computer models say, which are consistently overestimating warming. But it comes down again to the fat controllers who print the money. They want to increase the cost of energy because they think there's too many of us consuming too much. And so the way they do it is to characterize our consumption as wrecking the planet as they're flying around in their personal
jets. And structure the market so when there's a perceived shortage, spot price goes up. Profits are huge, and Winstone Pulp and Paper and everyone else talks about closing down in small towns. Well, that works really well, doesn't it? What the hell?
Yeah, I mean, the aim is, and they can't sell this, but, I mean, James Shaw in his first letter to the Climate Commission stated, you know, that the barriers to New Zealand achieving its climate goals are population growth and economic growth. So at the end of his six-year tenure as climate minister, our live birth rate was down 28%. It's just gone off a cliff. And our economic growth was second to last in the world after Equatorial Guinea. So it's a brilliant, unpalatable thing that they want. They're never going to come right out and say it. It's like, we want to destroy the middle class and reduce productivity.
And I find that anyone who goes on about population never kind of volunteers to help out.
No.
Right? No, they don't.
It's incredible.
All right, moving on. And Hipkins says Māori never ceded sovereignty. Willie Jackson says anyone who disagrees is a right-wing reactionary. It's a you subject, Māori, but Ro, you can give your thoughts on this if you want, first up.
Hipkins said that Māori never ceded sovereignty, but then he said that the Crown still has sovereignty. So that is so contradictory, isn't it? I mean, make it make sense. I saw this quote from former Labour PM David Longhi, and he observed that demographic governments can accommodate Māori political aspirations in many ways. What it cannot do is acknowledge the existence of a separate sovereignty. As soon as it does that, it isn't a democracy. And this the direction that Labour and the Māori Party and the Greens want to take us. They want to destroy our democracy, and we'll basically have tribal rule. I really hope that National, ACT and New Zealand First stand up really strongly against this.
It's telling that he uses the word reactionary as well, I always think, because reactionary is a Marxist term, and it is basically refers to someone who's resisting the revolution. And it is an ethno-nationalist revolution. And they always quote themselves, like Chloe Swarbrick is quoting a report the Waitangi Tribunal wrote in 2014, as if that's some objective academic group rather than an organization that's mostly comprised of activist Māori lawyers and judges who seem to remember one of your guests recently, Paul, said he can't remember a single instance in which they turned down a claim. So we're expected to believe these people are objective, but they're not. And that's not to say I'm not really interested to hear what they've got to say. What I don't like is them shutting down any opposing views, and that's where we are again. It's
falling, isn't it?
Show, isn't there?
Yeah.
The other thing is, I haven't heard any convincing sort of mapping out of how we could operate in their fevered dreams, where it would work. I haven't heard any plan. I haven't heard any sort of roadmap of it could work like this, it could work like that. And I know that it probably can't work because you can't have those two parallel systems and have the share the same space and resources. I think it's impossible. But no one's laid out any sort of vision for that.
Well, it's the same reason that the people who are pushing the climate change hysteria don't tell you what their vision is. It's because you won't like it very much.
And it's exactly the same reason gender ideology was introduced by stealth. They did not want you to know.
Because they knew.
Yeah, they knew we wouldn't like it.
Well, then that means they know that there's something not quite right with it, yet they still go with it. It's still, God.
Yeah, it's basically wanting the power of veto over everything that happens. And it's not even the aspiration, if you read a lot of what's said, the aspiration isn't a partnership between people of New Zealand. It's a partnership between Maori leaders and the Crown.
Yeah.
So basically, they are above ordinary people.
Like the Crown is a tribe.
Yeah, yeah. And my argument has been the reason they don't spell out what their aspiration is because what it is a traditional Maori arrangement where there are chiefs, there are commoners, and there are slaves.
And that worked out really well for them last time, didn't it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the other thing is, I mean, Maori did at the Kohe Marama conference, the chiefs voted unanimously to confirm that they did cede sowereignty to the Crown. Apirana Ngata wrote unambiguously that Maori ceded sovereignty. It's that a lot of the problem, I think, comes from a culture clash where when Maori fought against each other, they would absolutely vanquish their enemies to the point of eating them. And the British were looking for a more, right, we've got you, okay? So that's it. And they didn't quite understand that. So it's like, are we beaten? Are we not beaten? And so I think that's what we're seeing. There wasn't that being absolutely destroyed in the traditional sense. So, well, we'll keep fighting until we win.
Yeah. Christopher Hipkins couldn't answer the question of what was a woman, but he seems to be able to answer this one okay.
Yes. Well,
what did he say?
Yeah. He said, I accept the overwhelming body of literature that suggests Maori did not cede sovereignty. Having said that, sovereignty was clearly taken. So again, the overwhelming body of literature is the academic body. And my
experts.
I like to step back. You know, I like to think, hey, you know, the newspapers aren't reporting on this in such an unbalanced way because they love Maori and they think they've been done a terrible injustice. I always wonder, well, is it because if you want to make New Zealand a client state of China, for example, the best way to make people surrender to that is to disenfranchise them, to say, hey, you're not here legitimately. Forget your feelings of national pride. Your being here is based on all sorts of injustices and lies.
Oh, so much to look forward to. I'm just mentioning media there, and this is not on the list, but I want to raise it anyway. TVNZ are publishing their editorial kind of philosophy and stance. Did you see that this week? And if you did, what do you think they're trying to tell us?
Yeah, Marie asked me about that, and I didn't see it. But you know, again, it sounded from what she said like they were saying, "Tell us how noble we are." It doesn't sound like they're making a genuine attempt to better represent the views of New Zealanders. And it's that dawning, icy understanding you get when you realise the people of New Zealand aren't the customers of our media companies. The advertisers are. And that's how they can be so at odds.
They got ratioed off the planet, though.
It's hilarious, isn't it?
Well, I'm just actually looking at it. I've just looked it up as we're talking. And, you know, they've put down that their values are to bring independent, comprehensive, impartial and in-depth news. Well, that's already a joke right at the beginning, right?
Yeah, first line. Yeah. They're trying hard, aren't they? It's a try hard.
And it's not influenced by any improper political, sectional, commercial or personal interests, whether from inside or outside the organisation. Rightio.
Yeah, you've got to keep going back to that stat about 80%+ of New Zealand's journalists self-identifying as either left or hard left.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want all journalists to be more freedom, less government types like me, but I'd like to hear that view represented somewhat. Especially
there must be panic in the boardroom because they know that they're losing the people. They know it. It's right in front of them. They know that news is... I used to make TV ads. That was the most expensive slot back in the day, you know?
Well, I see they talk about diversity of perspectives here and they aim to reflect and represent the diversity of views in the community. Well, we never see a diversity of views on TVNZ, do we?
I don't know because I never watch it, so I wouldn't know.
I don't either, but, you know.
I mean, who does?
Yeah, or Radio New Zealand.
Don't get me started.
Well, you know, Paul, I said this on Media Matters the other day, and I think the Fourth Estate. I was listening to the breakfast show the other day, and I was listening to the news. I sort of forgot I was listening to RCR. I was just thinking, this news is great.
I know.
Yeah, well, it's our
really
news.
Nutritious.
It's our news.
Seems actually focused on telling the story rather than telling me what to think. It's just, I mean, it's a case of hanging in there and offering, because it's quite grating. I mean, the other comparison I made the other day on Media Matters was, I mean, a lot of what I do on RCR is talking about the media, and it's a lot like, you know, particularly after
it's great, by the way.
I've been on X and I've been, you know, reading things on Telegram and listening to RCR. The mainstream media is a lot like eating reheated fish and chips after I've had a really tasty buffet. It's just nauseating.
Well, it's clown show entertainment. Whenever I have caught a glimpse of it at someone else's place, it's like, oh, the clown show's on. Okay, I get that. And seeing those clips of those, you know, the project people and Paddy Gower and all those people, you know, at the Vaxathon, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You would be surprised at how many people still watch it, though, especially people 50 plus.
I know.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the jarring thing, isn't it, when you get told twice as many New Zealanders support Kamala Harris as support Donald Trump.
The programming kicking in. That's what you just said, Ro. Yeah, so many people still watch. That's how you know. Let's flick to US politics and RFK Jr. and his running mate, floating unity party with former President Trump. Ro, do you think there's something in this? Do you think US are ready for a third party?
I don't know if they're ready for a third party. I almost feel like Trump's MAGA movement is a third party. I mean, the Republicans have pretty much become irrelevant now, haven't they? I mean, Trump has moved them to the centre, almost to the left. I mean, it's very much the party of the working classes now. And I think bringing on RFK is just a brilliant strategy, having the likes of Tulsi Gabbard support the campaign as well.
Isn't she impressive? My God.
She
looks amazing. She speaks well. She's got that incredible, you know, veteran thing and, so smart.
Yeah. Oh. So hopefully she has a place if they can win in the new government. That would be great to see. But I just think it's great seeing that merging of left and right. And, you know, really the Democrats now have gone so far left. They're just off the bloody planet. But so what would be good to see is that, you know, the Liberals of old, move across to the Republicans as well. And it's really interesting watching their politics. Will the Democrats do something before the next election? I saw something today, actually. Trump has apparently warned. You heard that Mark Zuckerberg has basically admitted that the Democrats asked him to censor prior to the last election and through COVID. So Trump has just put out a warning to Zuckerberg and said that he could spend time, the rest of his life in jail, actually, if he manipulates the outcome of this election as well. So that's firing the warning shot across all of these social media platforms that have been censoring us.
You got the impression that Zuckerberg actually wrote that letter to Jim Jordan, wasn't it, of the Judiciary Committee, to get ahead of an awkward situation, you know, if Trump wins.
Yeah, well, maybe his eyes have been opened a bit. It was interesting watching that interview with him after Trump had been shot. Like, he said, you know, how do you not respect that when a man who's just been shot gets up and says, fight, fight, fight? You know, it's, yeah. So, you know, maybe there's some change.
Well, he's been, Mark Zuckerberg has been training, really seriously training jiu-jitsu and mixed martial arts. So he's been hanging out with a lot of really top martial artists. And the speculation is that that's caused his testosterone level to rise a bit.
Ah, here we go.
And and just the hanging out with these guys, they've just been red-pilling him hard. So there is that. And I do, reading that RFK Jr. might has expressed interest in a position that encompasses areas of chronic disease, while Gabbard has highlighted her experience with foreign policy. I just do feel that hope that instantly makes me feel vulnerable, because that would be so great.
Yeah.
And it does offer the world the possibility that we might get free of this.
You would hope, but these people are still connected, Marty. They're still connected to corporations and, you know, share portfolios and things like that.
Yeah, and the amount of wealth that those people have accrued, particularly even over the last 6 years, is incredible. And I guess where that leads me to think is, well, that they're going to be seeing this and thinking, wow, we've got to stop this. And so, yeah, it's going to be a very, very tense few months.
How far will they go? I mean, there is two very polar opposite options really now, isn't there? You know, you've got Kamala Harris, a vote for her is a vote for censorship and lawfare and basically the power, abuse of power by the state to do anything they want to do. I mean, did she say she's going to sign an executive order to take away guns on her first day?
Yeah, well, she's said all sorts of things.
Yeah.
And that's why she's not doing interviews, and somehow she's getting by with that. She said she's going to enforce equity, the taxes they're proposing on unrealized profits and all sorts of things.
That's right. Capital gains, unrealized capital gains.
It's communism.
Lala. Lindsay, that's what Lindsay's known for, Commie Lala.
Yeah, they're not the Democrats anymore at all. Like, you know, as I said, two completely different options, communism or freedom. Take your pick.
If communism is being served up by an alcoholic mock black woman, it seems to make it palatable all of a sudden.
They love it. They love it. Oh, dear.
What it reflects is just how easy it is to brainwash the public through propaganda of mainstream media, right?
And we've got to blame.
Someone like that can hold up in the polls the way she is just unbelievable.
Well, whose fault is that? We've got to blame the people who are easily brainwashed in the end, don't we? And that's what you get.
Well, it's that thing, you know, those who don't study history are doomed to repeat it, and those who do study history are doomed to watch every other dumb bugger repeat it.
Or One News. Yeah. Okay, just to finish up, and we were, just to say again, we were to have Jill Ovens as part of this panel, but something's happened there, so we'll reschedule Jill for another day. So I want to thank Marty and Ro for, we had an engine down, but we still managed to carry on and stay in the air.
Good aviation analogy there, Paul.
Yeah, well, I always come back to those.
Yeah, they're safe.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there always seems to be an applicable one as well, you know?
I can imagine your engine going out and you'd still have that calm voice. Oh, we seem to have lost both engines.
Kicking a bit of rudder. Just to offset the asymmetric loss of thrust, and you never know.
That's what we did.
Yeah. So to end on, the terms of reference for phase two of the COVID inquiry have come out. We've had quite a bit to do with that with the people's terms. Katie Ashby-Coppins, just same with Alia Claire Libby, VFF, the whole team has been involved in that, pushing. We had Brooke Van Velden on yesterday to talk about that. People will make up their minds what they thought of what she had to say. She did say that she believed in this, but there are limiting terms of reference. Anyone got anything to say about that? Given that this has been news this week, and it has made it into the mainstream news, I've noticed.
I have to admit, and I apologise for this, but I've been quite busy with work this week, and I've seen it, but I haven't read much about it, so I need to catch up on that.
Okay, Marty?
It's good to see some of the things creeping into the frame terms of reference that should have been there. Vaccine efficacy is a big one. The limitation on the dates is kind of odd, and there's that ongoing issue that you have with any government inquiry where they're set up to say what suits the people who are setting it up. But if you can contrast what we've got now with what Ashley Bloomfield and Jacinda Ardern had set us up to look at, you'd have to say we've made tremendous progress. And it's in no small part, as you say, due to the efforts of RCR and the people in VFF and NZDSOS to expand it, and also to get New Zealand First to make it part of the coalition agreement.
I want people in jail. There you go.
Yeah.
I don't know if we'll ever see accountability like that, unfortunately, Paul.
Yeah, but if we don't see it, the concern is that vigilante justice will be meted out. Do we want that?
Well, I think we have to be somewhat realistic about how patient we may have to be if you think about how long...
We're going to have to wait to 2026 to get anything from this anyway.
Is that how long it's going to take before the
results? Apparently, the reporting back, yeah.
Is that before the next election?
Actually, good point. I think it's might be, in that year anyway, yeah.
Oh, that would be rather handy, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, as Guy Hatchard was saying when you interviewed him, they've stopped reporting on deaths week to week now, but there are some things leaking out, like there's been a doubling of heart attacks, and there's an 8% increase in people who are too disabled to work, up from last year. So I think as it affects more and more people, but it's astonishing. I mean, there've been so many people my age have died. I know just in Gisborne this year, and you can read the Facebook comments, and people are saying, "Oh, it's just amazing! It's like something dark's hanging over this town." There's been so much.
Do you think?
Yeah, but they connect the dots, do they? It is amazing how.
Yeah, good point.
Just completely oblivious to the biggest mass experimentation that has ever happened on the world's public, and they just are not connecting that there is, you know, a correlation there.
Yeah, I mean, it's still possible for people who obviously know better to still be lying. And that's what astonishes me. You've still got the Ministry of Health advising pregnant women to get COVID vaccines, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
And Bloomfield's back in a new job with ESR, running ESR. It's like it's in your face.
Still popping up, and you're just thinking, How about you apologise for those mandatory experimental gene therapies that didn't work but seemed
to... Get on your knees. I want you on your knees. I want you begging for forgiveness right in front of me and everyone else. Sorry, that's what I want.
Well, yeah.
And then so proceeds of crime, you lose everything.
Yeah, there's so much sunk cost in the whole narrative, the whole safe and effective narrative. I don't know if we'll ever see them fess up and say they were wrong.
Hmm. Maybe one day, who knows, live in hope. And that's our panel for this Friday. Thank you, Marty Gibson, and thank you, Ro Edge. Thanks for coming on, Ro.
Lovely to be here.
Thanks, Paul. Keep up the great work in the morning. It's great to listen to.
Thank you for those words. Yeah, we'll have another political panel in next week, and maybe Jill Ovens will be back with us then. Until then, we'll see you.
All righty. Thanks, Paul.
From caps to tees and bags to bumper stickers, we have you covered. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/shop.